meekness is something that is a quality that we need to acquire. This is a quality that women are told to adorn themselves with. Let's look at 1 Peter 3, and you're right, it's something that we should have and use. But sometimes I think God chooses the people who are not so high on themselves to do his work rather than those who are. And I forgot to turn the class on, so whoever didn't hear it, we'll only get the last 15, 20 minutes of it. But anyway, I'm sorry. Let's read 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 4. Linda, would you read that?
I'll start with 3. And let not your adornment be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God.
Okay. And then, as we go on in verse 6, Sarah is the one who is used as an example of this. Did anyone come up with examples in her life that shows she was not a doormat? So many times people think if you have a gentle and quiet spirit, you're just a doormat. You're just kind of to walk on and nobody, you know, you never speak up for yourself. You never have an idea. Husbands are the boss and you just say, yes, sir, and go on. Was Sarah a person like this? Okay. Let's turn over to Genesis 16. There's Sandra, would you read verse 1 through 3, please?
And yet you see her before that, she obeyed and she went, you know, when they were called away. She was not self-serving to the fact that she wanted to stay in their homeland. I mean, she went with Abraham, and we don't have anything from the Holy Spirit that says that she's just kicking and screaming, you know, leaving that.
No, that's right. Sandra, would you read verse 1 through 3, please?
Now, Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar. So Sarah said to Abram, see now, the Lord has restrained me from bearing children. Please go in to the maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children by her. And Abram heeded the voice of Sarah. Then Sarah, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, and gave her to her husband Abram to be his wife. After Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan.
Okay, so here's a woman who, even though she is talked about as being a gentle and quiet spirit, who had a very good idea, she thought. You know, Abram had had an idea. He was going to let Eleazar, his servant, have let his son be his seed, and God said no. And so now here comes along Sarah's plan, and Abram agrees with it, and they go with it, and we're going to see that it didn't work out too well. So just because, as women, we have ideas and we express them and then our husbands listen to us, remember, you have responsibility in that. But yes, we can still be a gentle and quiet spirit and have ideas and express those to our husbands and try to get them to understand at least what we're wanting. Then, down in Genesis 16, 4 through 6, Deanna, would you read that, please?
So he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress became despised in her eyes. Then Sarah said to Abram, my wrong be upon you. I gave my maid into your embrace. And when she saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between you and me. So Abram said to Sarah, indeed your maid is in your hand. Do to her as you please. And when Sarah dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence.
Okay, so now here's Sarah again. Now, God's not pleased with this, but just to show you that just because you are a gentle and quiet spirit doesn't mean that you're just this little mealy-mouthed, milquetoast person who anybody can push you around. Sarah was not easy to push around. Her maid didn't, after Sarah's idea and she became pregnant and she was, you know, I guess she was either jealous or the maid was, look what I can do and you can't, I don't know. But there was a situation here that Sarah said I was despised in her, she was despised in her sight. And so she's pretty upset with Abraham, and so he said, okay, go do what you want to do. And she goes, and she's not nice about it. And that's not the way we should be, but this is our example. So that you're not a perfect person just because you're a meek and quiet spirit. We should strive to be that, but realize we can make mistakes, and that we do have ideas, and that our husbands can let us have our way, and it still not be a good thing. And then, in Genesis chapter 21, and Lauren, if you'll read 8 through 14.
So the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the same day that Isaac was weaned. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, scoffing. Therefore she said to Abraham, cast out this bondwoman, her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, namely with Isaac. And the matter was very displeasing in Abraham's sight because of his son. But God said to Abraham, do not let it be displeasing in your sight because of the lad or because of your bondwoman. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice, for in Isaac your seed shall be called. How far is it?
14.
Okay. Yet I will also make a nation of the son of the bondwoman because he is your seed. So Abraham rose early in the morning, and he took bread and a skin of water, put it on her shoulder, and he gave it to it and the boy to Hagar, and sent her away. And she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba.
So here again, Sarah says, okay, this is what I want. And it's not what you would think of as a person who's a gentle and quiet spirit, and yet she's their example. We shouldn't look to these bad examples and say, okay, Sarah made all these mistakes, so I'm justified when I mess up. But God allowed these things for some other reasons, but we won't get into that in this class. But God thought it best that they weren't raised together. And so he said, okay, you listen to Sarah. And, of course, if he hadn't listened to Sarah in the first place, he wouldn't be in this mess. But my point with this is that just because someone is classified as being meek and gentle does not mean they cannot be very harsh and deal with some things in a very strong manner. And harshness should not be tolerated. It won't be tolerated by God if it's out of a self-seeking vein. But if you come across as harsh because that's you're dealing with a situation and people feel that way, do not take it and feel like you've done something wrong just because they accuse you of that and tell you, well, you're not the woman of 1 Peter 3, because that you may be exactly being the woman of 1 Peter 3 or the woman of Proverbs 31 if it's in a spiritual context that you're trying to help someone and they take it as you being harsh or hard. Okay, any other questions or comments on gentleness? As we read these about Sarah, it's certainly not somebody that the world would consider a gentle and quiet spirit.
And yet, in other incidences that we read about in the lives of Sarah and Abraham, from the time they leave the Ur of the Chaldees until... even when they go down into Egypt, and then they go, back into Canaan and everything, you see this respectful woman that the Lord reminds.
I'm not doing anything to deny that she was this woman.
There is, yes.
I am just saying that's not our class today.
No.
Our class today is what people think meekness and gentleness is, and examples. Just like with Jesus, Jesus was a perfect man while he was on this earth. So I'm not, anything I say about like him driving out those, I don't want to take away from the goodness and greatness. And I'm not trying to in any way take away from the goodness of Sarah. And she is our example, and we are to follow her. And we need to look at those things and follow her. But I'm just saying, so many people think when you're meek or gentle, you never stand up for yourself. You never have any idea whatever anybody else wants to do. You're just a big pushover. And that is not what the words mean. That's the only reason for these examples. I'm glad you brought that up, Linda. I'm not doing anything to try to detract from Sarah being this kind of woman. She was a woman that was held up as an example of being a gentle and quiet spirit. But that does not mean that she did not, that she was just, okay, Abraham, anything you want, whatever. No no ideas of her own, no disagreements, everything's just, I'm a doormat, you walk on me and tell me what you want. If I want an idea, you give it to me. That's my point with this. Sarah was a very good woman. She did go with Abraham. She is our example, and we need to study her from those examples. That's just not our lesson today. Okay, we've got about 15 minutes, and so I want us to start looking at self-control, and maybe we can get the definition out of the way this morning. And then next week we can finish that up and get started on the last section that I handed out. Lauren, I do have an extra class, an extra sheet this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we're down toward the back. We're starting on self-control.
Before we leave gentleness, there in Matthew 5, where it talks about the character of the citizens of the kingdom,
mm-hmm.
Is that gentle there? Is that the meekness and things? Is that the same word and things for citizens?
I do not know. I did not. I I would assume that it has some of the same tenets in the definition, but as far as it being the same word, I do not know. I did not look that up, but I think very possibly it could be the very meaning that we're looking at. When it's self-seeking, and for me, I'm willing to sacrifice myself, but when it's for God's word, I'm willing to do whatever I have to do to defend that, just like Jesus did when he drove out the money changers, and just like Moses when even though he was contending with God, it was for the glory of God. He did not want God to be viewed as either not able to take these people where he intended to take them, or that it could be said of God that you did this on purpose to bring these people out here just to kill them. He did not want anything to come back and look badly on God. That was his whole reason. It wasn't just like, and how many of us would have even been willing to have thought about that? Here, the nation's going to come through me. The Christ will come through me. That would be a very prideful thing. That would be something that would build you up and think, and it would still be through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So it was still, the promise would be fulfilled. It wasn't like God was breaking his promise. The promise would be carried on because Moses came through them. And so I would think that if it's not the same word, I would think it would have a lot of the same meaning. In the margin, it says, or humble, or meek. So it doesn't say literally, so I really don't know. And there are several words, when I looked it up, that were translated that. So, but as far as it being the same word, I don't know. But I definitely think it's the same idea. Okay. Does anyone have a definition of self-control that they would like to share?
Restraint exercised over one's own impulses, emotions, or desires.
Okay, very good. Where'd you find that one?
Dictionary.
Okay.
English dictionary. I couldn't find it in the
time. You had to look under temperance. There again.
You have that.
I know. I'm sorry.
It would have been too easy to think of that myself.
I'm sorry. I thought about that later, but actually I thought about it when I was studying for this lesson. But any time that if you can't find it or if the word doesn't look right, just look it up in the King James, and I'll try to do better.
I think I own a King James. I guess I do.
Well, you have, don't you have?
I don't. I forget things.
That's where mine is. And you can probably get one for your Kindle, if you wanted a bigger screen.
They have them in college stores. Everywhere. King James Bibles.
Yeah.
Nice ones.
And they're cheap, usually.
Yeah.
I'm sure we still have one on the shelf. Steve used to keep, just when people came, and that way he would have it. If he was studying with somebody and he knew that's what version they would use. Of course, now he takes his iPad, and he's got it on the iPad or his telephone, so. So anyway, the reason I ask you that is because Thayer's definition is the virtue of one who masters his desires and passions. And then it says especially his sensual appetites, but I think that is more his comment than his definition. because I don't see anything in the word itself that I could find.
It's not fine. It just keeps referring back to self-control. Form of self-control. It represents God, man's response to God. It follows righteousness.
A comment I found also in Vines, it says one of the comments was, the various powers bestowed by God upon man are capable of abuse. The right use demands the controlling power of the will under the operation of the Spirit of God. In other words, by God's word, we can control whatever is in us that God has given us. You know, just about everything that God has given us has either a choice to be used for good or bad, whether it be the sexual appetite. You know, that's used for, Satan uses that as a great way to cause men to lose their soul. If he can get them to have an affection or fall in love with somebody, how many people do you know that are just willing to walk away and leave everything that has ever been of value to them for that? Money. How many people, once they get, it's not money, it's the love of money. They want that money so bad. They're willing to sacrifice their principles. You know, they'll lie, they'll cheat, they'll do whatever they've got to do. They want the money. They'll steal. They're too lazy to work, but they'll steal it if they get a chance. We have to have self-control. And so, and alcohol. Alcohol, I'm sure, has medicinal purposes. I know it does. There's things it can be used for that can be for good. But how much, you know, that's a little bitty minuscule part of what it's used for. We have to learn to control ourselves. And so, one definition I found, and I didn't put where I got this, so I'm not sure exactly where it came from. Restraint exercised over one's own impulses, emotions, and desires.
That's what I read.
Oh, is that what you read? Well, where'd you get that?
Merriam-Webster.
Oh. Okay, well, I guess that must be right.
The Webster.
Okay. I'm sorry, I thought that sounded familiar. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, so
the self, of course, is talking about, you know, you doing it, your will.
That's exactly right.
Those passions.
And, you know, I pray for self-control. I pray for God to help me avoid certain things. But so many times what happens when we do that, you see somebody or you're talking to somebody that maybe is in an adulterous relationship or headed that way. It's like this big whirlwind is just sucking them down, and you can't pull them out fast enough to get them out. We don't flee. We go toward things. We know that this is a temptation to me. People with drugs, I think many of you here know that Steve has a nephew that was very, very deep into drugs. I mean, he sold methamphetamine. That's how he supported himself for several years. He was so drugged out, that's about all he could do to support himself. And he has been clean now for probably 4 or 5 years. But he will tell you, I will not go to those places. Those cannot be my friends. There's one girl that he really cared for. And he would have helped her get clean. But she didn't really want to be clean. She just wanted a relationship with him. And he finally told her, don't call me. I cannot have anything to do with you. Because I can be sucked in so easily. Because it's still a temptation. And so I'm so proud of him because he avoids that like the plague. But how many people do you know that will say drinking is a problem for them, but I'll just go and I'll visit with everybody, or, you know, we can have it at a party and I won't drink. Or this person that they're so drawn to and they know they're tempted by, instead of moving to another town if you have to, doing whatever you have to do. So it is, Linda's right, it's a self-control thing. We have to do this. God's not going to force us. You know, it would be nice if God would just give us a pill and that's no longer a desire for me. But it doesn't want that. It doesn't work that way. He doesn't want that. He wants us to serve him because we want to, not because he's forcing us. That's been from day one. He told Adam and Eve in the garden, don't eat of this tree. They didn't have enough self-control. Eve, when it sounded so good, and then Adam, when Eve gave it to him, they did not have enough self-control to say no. And that scares me, because what in my life do I not see that I need more self-control in, but I do not exercise. You know, it's always easy to sit and see what everybody else ought to change. We can tell everybody else how to fix themselves, but when it comes down to us, we have to have the self-control to fix and use our and use that restraint over whatever it is. And the impulse to me, boy, that's the hard thing. Because, you do it, and it's done before you even realize it, because it's something you wanted to do, and you just did it, and you think, why did I do that? And sometimes it's not even things that are just out-and-out sin, but things that are not good judgment. That we, you know, if we start there, then the big things maybe we can help too. But so many times those snap judgments that we make and do something on an impulse leads to other things. I know a lot of people, their impulses on their financial thing that gets them in trouble quickly because they can't control those impulses. Well, then they're in big trouble because they can't pay the bills and they can't support themselves. Well, they can't. They can never make enough money to support their desires. And so we really have to be careful of that.
And I think as parents with young children, that is the end result of all training and teaching and discipline. Is you've got control, with this little person, and you exercise that, and you teach them while you administer the control, because when they grow up, you want them to learn to have the self-control, so that you don't have to be, as their parent, when they're an adult, using, you're not going to have the control in the first place.
No, they won't allow that.
But they haven't grown to have self-control. So that's the end result of training children, is for them to have self-control.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Okay, any other comments before we stop? We're going to stop here. And we'll pick up with B under self-control on Wednesday. And we'll finish self-control, and we will get into and start the rest of. And if we finish the rest of the lesson next week, fine. If not, I really want to. What I did, rather than what I had already given you, I changed this because it just made a more natural flow for me. We've talked about the deeds of the flesh and the fruits of the spirit, and I wanted us to talk about some things that would help us avoid the deeds of the flesh and attain the fruit of the spirit. That made a better flow for me in my mind at this time than it did. So, anyway. And like I said, I have deleted those, but if there's anything else on the other list that I kept one or two of them on there, but I deleted one or two. So if you have anything else, that some of those that you have some thoughts on, I'm more than willing to discuss those. But anyway. Did anybody not get that sheet? The extra sheet. The myth. No, you don't. I just printed it out this morning. You can just keep that. Okay. And I thank everyone for being here.